Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down.
Welcome to Southern Sense, which is common sense, and we won't tolerate any nonsense. So tune in and stand by.
Good afternoon to another Freaky Friday here on Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Anne, the radio chick, and I have Cool Mike with me as my co-host. Our chat room is open. I welcome you to join us there. And our call-in line is open, 917-889-3675. There's a lot going on. Right now in the UN, Bibi Netanyahu is speaking after Mahmoud Abbas from Palestine requested recognition of statehood in the UN, and Netanyahu now is speaking about that. We'll just be following that on our other computer while we talk about the debate last night. I think that has actually trumped all other information that's going on, because I did have a bunch of really good stuff here picked out, but I think we're going to talk about the debate. And there's been a lot of great audio clips I have that I will be playing, and I have one. Let me find it. Here we go. We're going to turn around, and I had mentioned last time that when they were doing the debates in Tampa, they had the 17-year-old boy who came up and asked three members, the GOP candidates, how much of his own money he should keep. And I kept on saying no one gave the right answer. Well, they asked this question again last night, and Michelle Bachmann got the question, and now someone finally answered the way I felt it should have been answered. And here's that question.
Congresswoman Bachmann, after the last debate, a young member of the California Tea Party said he didn't feel that he had had his question fully answered. And it's a question that received the most votes on Google and YouTube on the list as well. The answer to his question is a number. And the question was, quote, out of every dollar I earn, how much do you think that I deserve to keep?
And after the debate, I talked to that young man, and I said, I wish I could have answered that question, because I want to tell you what my answer is. I think you earned every dollar. You should get to keep every dollar that you earn. That's your money. That's not the government's money. That's the whole point. Barack Obama seems to think that when we earn money, it belongs to him, and we're lucky just to keep a little bit of it. I don't think that at all. I think when people make money, it's their money. Obviously, we have to give money back to the government so that we can run the government, but we have to have a completely different mindset, and that mindset is the American people are the genius of this economy. It certainly isn't government that's the genius, and that's the two views. President Obama has embraced a view of government-directed temporary fixes and gimmicks. They don't work. He's destroyed the economy. What does work is private solutions that are permanent in the private sector. That gives certainty. That will grow our economy.
Finally someone answered that. And, Mike, what's your opinion on that one?
She's had a week to prepare for that answer, Annie.
Well, true. True.
Good God, she wish she could have answered it. Michelle Bachmann's a fraud. She could have answered it then. I mean, everyone's always interrupting everyone, and even the one guy said, can I answer that question? Bottom line is that was total politics there. They're all running for president. They're all going to fiddle the tune that you want to dance to until they get elected, and they're going to start playing rap. But I missed the debate, but I heard it was a great one. I mean, I wish I could have saw it.
Well, it actually highlighted Newt Gingrich and Herman Cain a lot more than any others in the past. And it basically showed their wit and made them more attractive, I think, to the audiences. Because when they introduced Newt at the one in Tampa that I went to, half booed, half clapped for him. when he came in this time, he had more people clapping, but he had still some boos. And he's got baggage that he's got to answer for. But this time, I think when he left that debate, he was elevated. He and Herman Cain went at least one or two steps up.
Well, I think of all the candidates, Newt and Herman Cain are probably the most eloquent speakers. I mean, let's face it. Both of them are very schooled in as far as addressing people. Herman Cain is the CEO and is a supervisor in addressing employees. Newt, obviously, a great speaker in the House as far as addressing Congress. You know, I think a lot of times the media tends to put clouds over these individuals' heads. So when they get up to talk, it starts raining. It's not necessarily what the individual candidate is saying. It's the poison that the media has lashed out. If Newt's got a lot to answer for, and obviously he will, his chance is coming where he's going to get a chance to answer a lot of those. But in the meantime, I think in all type of primaries, people wean themselves out. Eventually after a primary, one or two people leave. Eventually after another primary, two or three other people leave. That process takes care of itself. They really don't need people kind of, or media self-incriminating individuals. And I've always thought to myself that in a debate or a discussion, you're more or less looking for the answer that you want to hear to the candidate you support. And that's how you choose a candidate. I think in many, many ways now, in today's day and age, you almost have to be an American Idol type speaker who can use his hands and use their emotions to kind of win over everybody's win over everyone's support. So at the end of the debate, when they say who won, well, 40% of America felt this. If you disagree with everything, then it'd be fair to say you were not going to support that person. So, I mean, my whole point is that I think we need to listen to what's being said and kind of analyze that as voters, and not necessarily what CNN is saying post-debate or Fox, et cetera.
Well, this is true. There was an interesting article written earlier this month on a blog called Modern Conservative, and the guy's name is Gregory Contero, and he made a very good point, and he has a Modern Conservative 2012 elections pledge, and he explains it this way. A lot of the people that are objecting to one of these candidates are doing it solely on an emotional level. They're not doing it through with a clear-cut argument, using reason. They're acting completely on emotion. And that's how we got Obama elected. My favorite phrase is he's the American Idol president. You know, he went on TV, he looked glitzy, he's glamorous, you know, he's young, and he's hip, and this and that. Oh, yes, and he's black. And he looks good. And he says, all right, we're going to show America's not racist anymore. We're going to vote for this guy. We're going to do it on an emotional level. No one stopped to listen to what he was saying. And before he even stepped into office, he already told us everything he said when he was running for election, he has done. And we got ourselves a caller in here. Let me bring this person in. And it's area code 510. You're on the air live. Who am I speaking to?
Hi, I just want to let you know that I'm a big Rony fan. I think everybody should embrace My Little Pony, and that's it.
I'm sorry, you're a big what fan? I didn't catch that. Did you catch that one?
No, I think that was another prank phone call, Annie. You gotta be wit to these guys. Anyway, but you know, and the whole let me kind of draw an analogy. Okay, you're at a debate. I'm at a debate, and let's say Tesla's at the debate. The three of us are sitting there. We're listening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then you have three people behind us, person A, B, and C. We don't know either one of the threes, but we know each other. And the debate is done. Ann thinks that Michelle Bachmann won. Cool Mike says that Newt won. And Tesla says that Romney won. Okay, so they turn the big TV on, and it's the post debate, and we have Sean Hannity, we have Bill O'Reilly, and you know, we have the guy who's always in the room asking the people the questions, Lefowitz or whatever. Well, anyway, my whole point is, we know who we support is in the front row, But that back row is going to be manipulated by that post-debate discussion, and where they may be supporting one candidate at the beginning of the post-debate, but at the end, they may be like, wow, and they have different opinions, because the opinions of what people say who are watching the debate, the opinions of the media themselves, I mean, that's where my whole point is that these people, the media themselves, are fueling an awful lot of, I don't know what word I'm looking at, influence. And sometimes mm-hmm. it's for their own gain. But the bottom line is that we need to be stronger, and we need to look for the answers that we as individual Americans want to hear. Not necessarily, or we need to listen for the answers that are going to help America, not necessarily what we want to hear. And that's very important.
No, that's also very true. And one of the things that he wrote in this article that I was talking about is he stated here, if Ronald Reagan himself were running in this primary, there would be people warning against voting for him because he once was a Democrat and, gasp, a union member. Oh, the horror. I mean, I love the way the guy writes. It's almost like sounding like listening to you. But the media and people that are against an ideal candidate are going to go and pick out the worst thing about them and say, oh, my goodness, Rick Perry, he was a Democrat, so you can't vote for him because he's not a true conservative. Well, heck, so was Ronald Reagan. You know, they're going to highlight the bad things, and we have to counter that with logic and say, right, fine, so what? He was a Democrat. He had an epiphany. I know a lot of people that once were Democrats. Things happened in their lives, and they changed, and now they are conservatives. So look at what they're doing now and what they're saying they're going to do for us, and hold them up to those standards.
Barack Obama, you know, you could call him a fraud, but he's, like you said, he's doing everything he said. We were blind. The Democrats really didn't win. The Republicans lost is what happened, because Republicans for so long supported George Bush and his sinking policies that most of the country got fed up with the fat cats. You know, the vice president, any of the people that were just taking advantage, people got fed up with that. And then this is what we got. And, of course, then they nominate John McCain, who's obviously another joke. I think what we have to do is really sort through all the smog, mm-hmm. all the smoke, all the fire, and we have to wait for it to clear. And when it clears, we have to look for the best candidate who's the best for this country, not look at what party they belong to, not look at the color of their skin, where they go to church, or maybe they're too old or they're too young. We have to look at the individual and just make the decision on our own. I think a lot of times when we listen to these biased media, well, this person has no experience. That's all we've been doing is electing people with experience, and look what we got.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and also look at another thing is that here we have something very important taking place in the UN. This is extremely, extremely important. And my question here is, are we going to defend democracy here, or are we just going to, the United States is all on the freedom of the beacon of freedom. Are we going to defend it, stand up for it, or are we just going to simply kind of go sit in the back row and watch these other people operate? Because for as long as we've been around, we've always been in the front row. We've always been the beacon. We've always been the leader. But all of a sudden now, it's politically incorrect to take the stance of democracy, of the republic. And we need to change that fast.
Go ahead.
I just think we need to change that fast. It's almost like now we're ashamed to say we're Americans. Ashamed to be standing up for free enterprise and for the republic and for the Constitution. It's almost a bad thing. You know what? It sure is not. And we need to stand up, and, you know, we need to tell, sure, the people in Palestine are entitled to freedom, and sure, they're entitled to a state. Are they willing to recognize Israel as a state who has the same freedoms, the same rights to survive as they do? Yes or no, period. Enough of this. Yes. Yes or no. If the answer is no, then they can kiss my ass. Too bad. Well, it's true. I mean, people are entitled to freedoms, but are they going to recognize Israel as a state? I mean, it can't be ignored, period. And we're not the only feet we're holding to the fire is our ally. I mean, it doesn't say, I mean, if you think about it, Israel's getting kind of a raw deal.
That's true. And in this debate and the prior one, I think this is where the libertarians really pushed away a lot of the independent voters. I'm talking about Ron Paul and Gary Johnson. And they both said they would take all troops across the globe and bring them home. So we would have no presence across the globe, and we would have no ability to defend our allies. And this is where Romney and a bunch of others did come shining through, and Romney had the best line when he dealt with Israel. And let me play this clip.
This week, with the Palestinian efforts at the United Nations, the issue of the future of Israel is a big concern to questioners. In fact, Governor Romney, the next question was a top question voted in the foreign policy section from Yigal Marcus in Teaneck, New Jersey.
As president, how would you approach the new reality in the Middle East, specifically with regards to our ally Israel and the existential threats it faces from Iran, Hamas, Hezbollah, and now the Palestinian Authority?
Governor Romney.
Very simply, you start off by saying that you don't allow an inch of space to exist between you and your friends and your allies. The president went about this all wrong. He went around the world and apologized for America. He addressed the United Nations in his inaugural address and chastised our friend Israel for building settlements and said nothing about Hamas launching thousands of rockets into Israel. Just before Bibi Netanyahu came to the United States, he threw Israel under the bus, trying to negotiate for Israel. The right course, if you disagree with an ally, you talk about it privately, but in public you stand shoulder to shoulder with your allies. The right course for us is not to try and negotiate for Israel. The right course is to stand behind our friends, to listen to them, and to let the entire world know that we will stay with them and that we will support them and defend them. And with regards to Iran, which perhaps represents the greatest existential threat to Israel, we have to make it abundantly clear. It is unacceptable, and I take that word carefully, it is unacceptable for Iran to become a nuclear nation.
That's perfect. That was absolutely perfect. And you're looking
yep.
at this, I can't even pronounce this guy, Abbas. He's not only president of the Palestinian Authority, but he's also president of the PLO. Now, haven't we declared the PLO a terrorist group? And now,
well, I'm unsure on that, but I mean, the bottom line is you were right. That's a great answer. We are such a hypocritical country over the past 15 years. You know, for many, many years, we didn't waver, especially under having people like Ronald Reagan. I mean, our colors didn't run. But now, George Bush says one thing, we got a new president, and Barack Obama says another. I mean, here is the bottom line. I don't think Mahmoud Abbas is Mother Teresa, and clearly Benjamin Netanyahu is not. But the bottom line is that here is this discussion. Israel has been our ally for a long time, as much as pamper and cater to them to a point where I don't really care for it. But the bottom line is they are a democracy. They are the only elected democracy in the Middle East. We either stand with them or we stand with the terrorists. It doesn't seem like there's much of a decision there. Not to mention, Annie, is that if we are to help anyone grow into a democracy, they must recognize Israel has the right to existence and is entitled to the same rights that these people want. Period. It's not debatable.
And what people don't realize, in the Middle East, the only nation that allows Christians, Jews, and Muslims to openly worship and to worship side by side without violence is Israel. There's no, and you can't call them Arab, and you know that because you call someone from Saudi Arabia an Arab, but you cannot do that to someone from Lebanon. You have to say they're Lebanese. But a Muslim nation. There's not a single Muslim nation that allows that to occur. And if they say, oh, you have it in Iraq, well, they're starting to build that, but they cannot do it with the same freedom they enjoy in Israel. And if you allow that to crumble, then you will never have unity between those three religions.
So what's your take on what's taking place in the Middle East? How would President Ubellus approach this?
I would probably do the very same thing Romney said. You know, you pull him aside in private and you have a private conversation with him if there's something that you see that you disagree with. But in public, he said it right. You do not let an inch of air between the two of you. You stand there shoulder to shoulder. And I would be standing there right now with Israel and saying, no, we have to negotiate this process. We have to make sure our borders are secure. And I'm not going to give away land that you can use later on to threaten me. I will turn around and dismantle settlements if necessary, but I will also encourage settlements to help protect our borders. And right now, the Palestinians do not have a good, solid foundation in which to declare themselves a nation. They have too much going on.
I also think, Annie, is we have to decide where those settlements should be. We're not going to let Hezbollah, Hamas, and the other absolute filth of the Middle East decide where these lines should be drawn. And in this situation, there's not going to be a happy medium. What there has to be is basically a line in the sand and then time, which basically younger generations don't really care what older generations or their bigotry or et cetera. And you have to hope in time that that just, you know, dwindles away. Because realistically, so many of this generation of trash from the Middle East, a lot of them are up there in years and they're going away. The media won't let it go away, but the media is slowly disappearing with the advancement of the Internet and paper and electronic media slowly, slowly just almost becoming irrelevant in society. So, I mean, that's really the only thing that's going to prevent the Middle East from being peaceful. But, you know, let's keep in mind, the United States has been around just over 220, 30 years. These places have been fighting for thousands and thousands of years.
Exactly. You don't,
I mean,
you don't
Barack
overnight.
Obama,
no, you can't overnight and come up with a settlement. And Obama's saying, we give you 1 year. Well, isn't this the same president that told them to go back to the 1967 lines back in May of this year? He is no friend of Israel.
He's no friend of the United States either. Barack Obama is the worst president, bar none. He has passed George Bush in this race almost like Secretariat did in the Belmont. Barack Obama is a disgrace to this country. He is an absolute communist. And you know what? He doesn't even have any backbone for the Constitution, which so many people have given their life for, including his own blacks. They have, Barack Obama is just a disgrace. I'm going to go on record. I would vote for George Bush again before I would vote for a third term before I would vote for Obama. How's that?
Now, there was a really good, funny line, and again, Romney had it. Not all these clips are Romney, please believe me, but he had two really good ones. And this is what he had to say about President Obama when they asked him if he was a socialist or communist. I forget what the question was. Here we go.
Do you, Governor Romney, believe that President Obama is a socialist?
Let me tell you the title that I want to hear said about President Obama, and that is former President Barack Obama. That's the title. Let me tell you this. What President Obama is a big spending liberal. And he takes his political inspiration from Europe and from the socialist Democrats in Europe. Guess what? Europe isn't working in Europe. It's not going to work here. I believe in America. I believe in the opportunity and in the freedom that is American, opportunity and freedom. I believe in free enterprise and capitalism. I believe government is too big. It's gone from 27% of our economy in the years of JFK to 37% of our economy. We have to rein in the scale of government or we're not going to continue to be a free economy. I love this country. I spent my life in the private sector, not in government. I only spent 4 years as a governor. I didn't inhale. I'm a business guy. I'm going to get America working again because I believe in the principles that make America the hope of the earth. Thank you.
I like that one, and I didn't inhale.
Yeah. That was such a funny remark, and I really find it amazing that time does stuff to the way people think. When is the last time John F. Kennedy would have been quoted in a Republican debate? But through time, history, he has a little different approach. John F. Kennedy was probably the last Democrat who was fiscally, with money, responsible, but yet very liberal in social policy.
Mm-hmm.
And in many, many ways, Ronald Reagan was very much liberal in social policy. He didn't believe the government should be in your living room. He believed if people were gay and they were doing so, it's just nobody's business. And he even used the comment, put up or shut up. Basically, just either provide some sort of proof or just go away. And I think it's really funny that we see, who was it who said, you're no John F. Kennedy? Was that Lloyd Benson said that remember in the debate, he goes, I knew John F. Kennedy. He said, you're no John F. Kennedy.
Yeah. Did he say that to Bush?
That was Bush's running mate, Dan Quayle, is who that was. But it's really funny is that, okay, we like JFK. It's 2011, 12, and, you know, he was a good president, overlooking the fact that JFK basically took Bill Clinton's affairs times 3,000. So, I mean, time just does amazing things. I mean, if you really think about it, John F. Kennedy was probably the most unfaithful president, at least that we know of, that was married. A single president would have been different. But, I mean, and the bottom line is that it is funny how we would be quoting JFK. How long before we start quoting Bill Clinton? I guess it. Well, it is. That's my point. You would have never. It's just weird how JFK is being quoted now. And just getting back, I think the last couple debates, I think Romney has really stepped it up. I don't really care much for Romney, but I'll tell you, he has gone on the attack, and he's really stood up as somebody who wants this job and who wants to be the Republican nominee. And you know what? So what? He's changed his mind on a couple things, even if it's just politically motivated. You know what? The game is politics. So that's how it rolls. Now, how many times have you or I changed our mind? Well, not too often, but we're not running for president either.
No, and what I liked is that instead of, well, they did have some attacks going between Romney and Perry, and there are some funny things that went on between the two of them, but it's not so much as a vicious attack, but what they're doing now is they're stepping up the game. Instead of attacking each other, they're attacking Obama and his record, which is what we wanted to see all along. What would you do different than what Obama has already done? What would you do to undo the damage that he has done? And I think on that one, Ron Paul and Gary Johnson nailed it. And, of course, it had to be the libertarians that got that. They were asking them about the 10th Amendment, and I think the two of them basically said what every last one of us was thinking, what a true conservative would think. And let me play this clip. I'm not going to play the whole thing because Gary Johnson goes on, and I'll cut him off at a point. But I want to get this main point, of course, on both of them.
Congressman Paul, I want to show you the video that got the most votes of all the video questions submitted to YouTube. And this one comes, as you can see, from Brandy and Michael in Spencer, Indiana.
There's growing concern among Americans about the size and the scope of the federal government and its infringement upon state and individual rights.
If you're elected president, how do you plan to restore the 10th Amendment, hold the federal government only to those enumerated powers in the Constitution, and allow states to govern themselves?
Congressman, what's your answer for Brandy and Michael?
Well, obviously it would take more than one individual, but the responsibility of the president would be to veto every single bill that violates the 10th Amendment. That would be the solution.
Anything else, sir? You got a little time left.
Well, I'll tell you what, that is the subject that is crucial because government is too big in Washington, D.C. It's run away. We have no controls of spending, taxes, regulations, no control on the Federal Reserve printing money. So if we want government, whether it's medical care or whatever, it's proper to do it at the local level as well as our schools. But there's no authority in the Constitution to do so much of what we're doing. There's no authority for them to run our schools, no authority to control our economy, and no authority to control us as individuals on what we do with our personal lives.
Thank you, Congressman.
Well,
Okay. We got to the full answer there at the end. Governor Johnson, same question to you about the 10th Amendment. With this added, you are an outspoken libertarian. What makes you a better choice for libertarian Republicans than Congressman Paul?
I'm not going to presume to make that assumption, but I would like to say that I do bring a unique perspective to this stage. I started a one-man handyman business in Albuquerque in 1974 and grew it to over 1,000 employees. I have run for 2 political offices in my life, governor of New Mexico and re-election. I promised to submit a balanced budget to Congress in the year 2013. I promised to veto legislation where expenditures exceed revenue. And if anybody doubts my willingness to veto bills, I think I vetoed more bills than any governor in the history of the United States. I think I vetoed more bills than all the other governors in the country combined. Add to that throwing out the entire federal tax system and replacing it with a consumption tax, the fair tax, which would absolutely reboot the American economy because it does away with the corporate tax to create tens of millions of jobs in this country.
That was perfect, you know. Adhere to the 10th Amendment. Government doesn't belong in our daily lives like they are now. They don't belong in our bedrooms. They don't belong in our cars. They don't belong in our schools. And I think they're both perfectly right.
Well, and there is no question they're right. The bottom line is that are we willing to stand up for what is right? And the bottom line is we haven't been for a long time. Whether it's, the issues are almost irrelevant because the bottom line is that none of them, very few of them pertain to the federal government. The Constitution is very clear. How much is Annie and Cool Mike and others willing to stand up for that Constitution? And I think in a lot of ways we're not going to I don't think we're going to eliminate these departments, which are illegal, but we can starve them. We can cut their finance and slowly but surely wean them off that, they just simply do not exist. And the bottom line is that I really liked both of their answers. One of the things I have I do have some serious issues with foreign policy as far as completely removing ourselves. It is a world now. And to protect the states of America from invasion, we don't have to have 109 bases, but we have to have some to protect our borders. We need to protect our borders. You don't protect California right at the Pacific Ocean beach. I mean, you protect it as close as we can, as further away as we can, to prevent those type of, Pearl Harbors and other type things from happening. I have, as much as I believe, and I agree in the Constitution, and I agree with George Washington, warning us to stay out of foreign entanglements. But the bottom line is we got some pretty mean people out there that hate us and they want to kill us. And to play naive that they don't is really foolish. And to think that, okay, well, we protect our borders at Mexico, Canada, and the two oceans, that's just as naive, Annie, and it's extremely stupid.
No, I completely agree. And it actually was Thomas Jefferson that finally decided to take the battle off of the shores of the United States and take it to the heart of the enemy when he went and sent the Marines to Tripoli to rescue the hostages that the Muslims were holding. You know, the Barbary pirates, they called them that politely instead of calling them jihadists, which is what they were. And we've been fighting them since the birth of our nation when they decided to capture our citizens, hold them hostage, hold them as slaves, and murder them, put them in such abhorrent conditions that Thomas Jefferson said, no, we will not be held hostage as a nation. And he sent the Marines to Tripoli and rescued them. And so,
well, another thing too, Annie, is on top of what you just said, we weren't prepared. That's one of the reasons the mission in Iran failed. We weren't prepared. I mean, if we fail to prepare, then we better be prepared to fail. This is one thing we never, ever, ever want to be caught with our guards down. Never. And the bottom line is that, okay, should we have 109 nations? Absolutely not. But, I mean, Japan doesn't seem to mind us there, and that's a very good strategic standpoint. And other places, do we really need to have all these troops in Afghanistan as well as Iraq, blah, 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 Saudi Arabia, on and on and on? Probably not. We'd have, you know, that's for the professionals to really analyze and the strategic war games. But the bottom line is that when our hostages were taken, we were so flat on our face and unprepared that even if we wanted to move, we could not have. To hear is we could have a rapid response team that would stand a better chance. Not all of these things are going to be successful, but it would stand a much better chance of being successful and preventing these type of problems. Well, wait, we wouldn't prevent it, but we could have maybe got in, got our the Americans who were working in the embassy and got them out, our citizens. But the bottom line is when we are just not prepared, these are the things that happen, and it's absolutely embarrassing that a bunch of just hooligans can basically embarrass us for that period of time with our hostages, and we really could do nothing in return but just, you know, take the embarrassment.
Well, what a lot of people don't realize, and this is a little-known fact, well, not a little-known, but it's a widely known fact that people just don't pay attention to. When we have a base in another country, it allows us to use their airspace to launch flights, whether or not it's for aid or for military operations. If we are not granted airspace, then our flights have to go a long way around, which limits their flight time, their fuel, and what type of ordnance they can carry. So if we have permission over Turkey, but we relinquish our base, we then may lose that permission. So if we need to fly over Turkey, then you have a huge negotiation process, and forget it, there goes your military operation right out the window. So if we have bases strategically placed that allows us the shortest distance in flight to go to whatever necessary target be, whether or not it's Egypt, Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, we need the permission to go over that airspace. And this is a problem we're having with some of these Muslim nations that grew out of the former Soviet Union, while we're trying to get bases over there. So in case we need to use that airspace, we have that permission. So by closing bases unilaterally across the globe, we're going to lose our military power. We will have no military power. We will have no defense.
Well, and it's just no different than a company. Companies that have franchises, whether it's a Burger King or what have you, they don't. They don't close every single store. They strategically look at their plans and their demographics of where their locations are, and we have to do something very, very similar. Just as I agree with Ron Paul about minding our own business, but minding your own business doesn't mean you just pack up and just absolutely pretend that, all we take care of is, America as far as the states. We have an awful lot of interests, and we have an awful lot of citizens that are abroad that are still entitled by Constitution to the protections, whether if they were in Denver, Colorado, or Phoenix, Arizona, wherever. They are still entitled to those constitutional rights. And we've seen that done before during the Clinton administration when they arrested some kid for breaking in cars or whatever. They were going to cane them. And, they wanted the feds to step in. And, an ostrich hides his head in the sand. Hopefully we're not this stupid.
No, I hope so, too. And one of the things that we have to do is not just our international relations. We got to make sure we close our borders. I mean, how many are coming across the borders? I'm not just talking about Mexicans or South Americans. I'm talking about other than Mexicans, the OTMs they call them, that are from Pakistan, from Somalia, and so on and so forth. They're sneaking across our borders, and we've got terrorists now living here in the United States. And one of the questions they asked was about the illegal aliens and using E-Verify. The E-Verify they're trying to get all employers to use. This is one way that we can turn around and track down our enemies within our borders. And Gingrich answered this one very well.
Congresswoman, thank you, and we're going to get back to that issue in a moment. But first, Speaker Gingrich, as you well know, there's a debate going on in Congress right now about whether or not to make
all employers, all businesses use E-Verify, a government database, to check whether or not new hires are legal. Now, some Tea Partiers object to that idea because they say it would turn small businessmen into immigration agents. But Kristen Williamson of the Federation for American Immigration Reform sent this question. Please look at it.
Kristen Williamson, the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Struggling U.S. workers continue to compete with millions of illegal aliens. Do you support legislation to require all employers to use E-Verify in order to ensure that the people that they hire are actually legally authorized to work in the U.S.? And will you impose penalties against employers who continue to hire illegal workers?
The question, Mr. Speaker, is should employers be required to use E-Verify?
Well, let me say, first of all, I think that we'd be far better off to outsource E-Verify to American Express, MasterCard, or Visa, because they actually know how to run a program like that without massive fraud. Second, the program should be as easy as swiping your credit card when you buy gasoline. And so I would ask of employers, what is it you would object to in helping the United States of America in dealing with a problem involving illegal immigration? But in addition, I want to reinforce what Congresswoman Bachman said. I strongly favor 100% control of the border, and I strongly favor English as the official language of government. And I favor modernizing the legal visa system to make it far more convenient, far easier, and far more practical here in Orlando, where we have a huge interest in people being able to visit easily for tourism. We have a terribly antiquated legal system while our border is too open for people who are illegal.
That's why I love Newt. No, how would you handle it if you had to use E-Verify?
You know, and I got to stop saying, you know, so whenever I do it, slap me in the face. Here's the bottom line, is that we have to protect certain, we have to protect people's identity in certain situations. If you're using a credit card, that credit card company has the right of, before they give you credit, of getting all that information. Whether or not all these credit card companies use one company to share this information, I'm not in favor of that. I do believe there needs to be a very, 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 underline it and circle it, stiff penalty for employers who continuously hire illegal immigrants as workers. Mm-hmm. And I am talking beyond what we can. I am talking absolute torture, because the bottom line is that if I see you doing it and you're getting away with it, guess what? Well, Cool Mike's going to do it, and blah 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 blah. The bottom line is that we need. It is greatly unfair. Okay, greatly, greatly unfair. I always love this debate. Here's a good debate for people like yourself and others, Annie. Do you see any illegals in the UAW? How about in the Teamsters? How about any illegal teachers being hired? No, you don't see that. The bottom line is, who's doing the hiring? It's basically $5 an hour type, and there needs to be a stiff penalty for it. Not necessarily because they're not union workers on my side, but it's because it's illegal. And it's unfair, because if there are three workers and one's illegal, you and me make up the tax that that person doesn't pay. Mm-hmm. We also make it up on the employer side who doesn't pay it. That should be eliminated, period, anyways. But the bottom line is that I think we need to absolutely make it – we need these people so scared that to hire illegal workers – wait a minute, not so scared, but we need to be very stiff on the penalties where people know that it's not worth the risk. You know, I shouldn't have said the word scared, but we don't want to be like a police state. But
no.
I'm also not in favor of one company having all this information, because that company could be the government, just as set up as a company as a front. The bottom line is, I do think there needs to be a local level type when a person applies for a job and when a person is hired. I think the employer is entitled to keep that person's name and certain information on file private, okay? However, that person has to have all the documents, his driver's license, social security card, or whatever card 50 years from now we decide, because social security probably will not be around then. But they need those full documents. Look, Annie, I'm going to hire you and you only have, a piece of paper written in crayon that's for Annie Ubelis, I can't hire you. You have to have the proper document. Who in the hell doesn't have a state ID? I mean, I always love this fact when people say, they come to our club and they say, your ID, well, I don't have one. What? How'd you even go to the bathroom, you idiot? I mean, but, getting back to the subject, I'm not in favor of one major company having access to all this. I think every employer needs to follow the process, and it's the same thing with a credit card. If I'm going to apply at the First Bank of New York for a credit card, then I have to be willing to give the First Bank of New York personal information, or else they don't have the right to extend credit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I hit you up for money, I say, hey, Annie, my name's Joe. I'm a friend of Cool Mike's. Can I borrow $100? I'm thinking, what? No different. I mean.
No. And matter of fact, here in the state of South Carolina, I found out there's a law that I didn't know about, that if you walk into a bar or restaurant and you order an alcoholic beverage, you must have photo ID, official government issued by either state or federal photo ID on you. If you don't, then you and the restaurant or bar or whatever it is can be fined. They have then, at that point, they should refuse to serve you. So if we do this for bars, we do this for banks, why don't we do this for voter ID and for employment?
And hey, some of these places are want to make it illegal to ask for ID at the voting places. So what's to prevent them stop every single precinct in voting? Now, I'm not really against it that bad, because I vote in every single precinct. I always take Election Day off. But Annie, that's greatly unfair to people like you and me who present our voter cards and our IDs. I mean, we got to make it fair. Enough of stuff where, maybe this person's homeless or just the stupid excuses for people who simply can't get an ID or who just don't take the responsibility of day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. I got in a car today and I drove. I had my license, my registration, and my proof of insurance. It is required by state, not federal, that I have insurance. Therefore, in operating a vehicle, I have it. Bottom line is that you get pulled over, I don't have it. If maybe you forgot your ID, or maybe it's in a pair of pants or, a purse that you left home or whatever, that happens. But, I mean, continuously, we're always making excuses for these people. We shouldn't have the right to ask them for ID when they go vote. Like hell, we shouldn't.
No. As a matter of fact, the state of South Carolina said, we will provide you the identification for free. And they're having a little thing in about 2 weeks, I think it is, where they will come to your home, pick you up, take you to DMV, and then bring you back home so you can get your free ID. But they're saying, nope, there's still about a bunch of them that are disenfranchised and so on and so forth. They're nursing homes or whatever. Well, first off, in order to be in the nursing home, you had to present an ID, didn't you? Otherwise, the nursing home wouldn't be accepting you, because it has to go through your insurance. Or you have to be paying somehow, and you have to have identifications so the doctors, the nurses, and everyone else know who they are, who you are, and they can treat you properly. So don't give me this BS about people in nursing homes. They're talking about doing this for homeless. That's why they want to get the homeless on the buses to the polling stations so they can vote often.
Very much so often.
Yeah.
Just an absolute crime once again.
If they can just do the e-verify where the business owner can key in the person's social security number, and if the picture that pops up matches the picture of the person sitting in front of them, then, hey, you're verified. That's all you need to do. You don't have to put down their full extra information like their address or anything. Just key in the social security number, let a picture pop up. Yeah, it's you. Okay, you're hired. I know that the number in front of me matches the person in front of me. You don't have to put all that information out in the public.
Well, also keep in mind that a system like that would work very, very well. I'm all for that. But we also have to document that person did both. So if when they're in Precinct 1, if they try in Precinct 2, that ain't happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. You just mark, as soon as the person votes, the little button goes up and says, all right, red, they voted, okay, stop the person. They're not allowed to vote a second time, or third time, or 15th time. The green button there says it's a go, red button says stop.
Yes, and the former Mayor Daley made a lifelong thing, vote Democrat and vote often. looking back on history, I guess there's some truth to that.
Oh, yes, I guess so. Excuse me.
No, I have to, Annie, I have to mute myself for about 60 seconds. I got an angry customer I must deal with. So if I'm not back in 2 minutes, call 911.
Okay. You're listening here to Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Annie Bells. Our chat room is open. It's kind of lonely, so please join us in there. Our call-in line is also open. It's 917-889-3675. We're talking about the debate because it seems to have I feel it's more important than talking about Solyndra or anything else like that, because the Solyndra and the green jobs scandal, that's going to be going on for weeks. But the debate last night was excellent, and I think there's certain things people should be hearing about on it. And we were talking about earlier the 10th Amendment and some of the things that could be done. And when I listened to Gary Johnson and Ron Paul talk about vetoing any bill that violates the 10th Amendment, the first thing that came to mind was Obamacare. And along that line, they've turned around and asked Herman Cain about Obamacare. And Herman Cain had a fantastic, fantastic answer. Let's play this.
Thank you, Megan. We've been showing you these word clouds throughout the night. Take a look at this one. All of the questions on health care. You can see the big word there, Obamacare. Chris has the questions on health care.
And we'll get right to that question of Obamacare. Mr. Cain, you are a survivor of stage 4 colon and liver cancer. And you say if Obamacare had been... We all share in the happiness about your situation, but you say if Obamacare had been in effect when you were first being treated, you'd be dead now. Why?
The reason I said that I would be dead on Obamacare is because my cancer was detected in March of 2006. And from March of 2006 all the way to the end of 2006, for that number of months, I was able to get the necessary CAT scan, tests, go to the necessary doctors, get a second opinion, get chemotherapy, get surgery, recuperate from surgery, get more chemotherapy in a span of 9 months. We had been on the Obamacare and a bureaucrat was trying to tell me when I could get that CAT scan, that would have delayed my treatment. My surgeons and doctors have told me that because I was able to get the treatment as fast as I could based upon my timetable and not the government's timetable, that's what saved my life, because I only had a 30% chance of survival. And now I'm here 5 years cancer-free because I could do it on my timetable and not on a bureaucrat's timetable. This is one of the reasons I believe a lot of people are objecting to Obamacare, because we need to get bureaucrats out of the business of trying to micromanage health care in this nation.
Now, that was perfect. Absolutely perfect. Herman Cain.
Yeah, I like Herman Cain, and I don't really dislike, with the exception of Michelle Bachmann, I don't really dislike any of the candidates horribly, but I think Herman Cain is... He basically is a company man who is sick of government up his ass. In everything he has to do, he has a rule or regulation. He bends over to take care of the government, and they stick him in again. I mean, and you can sense the professional anger in him just saying, back away. I mean, and he makes so much sense where he just talks about government. I mean, here's a person with cancer. And are you we'll get to you we'll get back to you after the first of the month. You know, no, I may be dead by then. I mean, once again, and he points out a great fact that there's going to be committees and boards and to decide whether or not Annie, Cool Mike, or somebody else lives, or whether or not this surgery is really worth it. You know, maybe an evaluation, well, you know, they're in their 80s, they're on their way out anyways, let's just wheel them right off the cliff. No, that's not how it works.
No,
you know, the Constitution says life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It doesn't say life from this age to that age. So, and it's up to the families to decide. It's up to the individual who is sick and the families to make the decisions on what sort of treatment this person will take, not a board in Washington, D.C.
Now, and I've been talking to a bunch of doctors and a couple of them that are my friends, and they're really frustrated with the new regulations that Obamacare has already put on them. And I have a friend of mine, he opened up a clinic, and I asked him, and I said, you know, how is it going? And he said, well, I'm open 1 year. And he said, right now, I am only breaking even. And he said, my biggest problem is trying to get paid because of all these new regulations and paperwork that has been put out there to put a blockade in front of me. You know, before he said it was a lot easier. You know, you still had to do the paperwork and everything, and it was obnoxious, but this is just exceeds it. He says that he's getting paid less than half. Now, can you imagine you're working and you're only getting about 45, less than 50% of what you actually have earned?
Yeah, I mean, it's a sad reality that we have enforced on that because we have become so intrusive that this is what we have forced upon, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Jones who want to start a family business and get their own company off the ground. They can't really hit the pavement running anymore. They have to hit the pavement and just wait until we say, okay, go. And that's really, really sad because, I mean, these are employers that potentially could hire other people, but we're delaying everything. And it's not being delayed for good reason. It's being delayed through just red tape and bureaucratic BS. It's just a sad, sad state of affairs. Why would we start our own company knowing that we're going to not only have a bunch of roadblocks thrown in front of us, but basically we're going to have someone from the government piggybacking us, and we got extra weight virtually on everything we do, whether it's what kind of toaster to buy, what kind of chemicals to use to mop the floor, never ending, what kind of dumpster you use. I mean, just it's never, ever ending. It's always something. If one thing Michelle Bachmann did say that made sense is that some reason or another the government thinks it's their money. We work for them. You know, that's not how it works. I think when we go to a fair tax, then basically our wealth base is put back under our own control, and we decide when we're going to pay taxes. We don't have to beg politicians to get back some of our hard-earned dough.
That's true, because it brings to mind something that I've been advocating, that we change the day that you pay your taxes to the first Monday of November, and you stop any and all withholding taxes, so that when you pay on that Monday, you have to physically sit down and write that check with all the zeros and the commas on it. And as you are scrolling that huge number of your taxes and putting it in the envelope and mailing it off to the government, that very next day you're going to the booth and you're going to be placing your vote. Who do you think you're going to vote for? It's not going to be someone like Obama. That I can tell you. Can you imagine how we can shrink our government if you just do those two things? Stop withholding taxes so you have to physically write the check and change the voting date to the date, I mean, the voting date, the date you pay your taxes to the day before you place your vote.
Oh, I'm all for that. I'm all for anything that will make things simple. Okay, but why would we want to shrink government, Annie? Look at all they do for us. They're going to feed us, and they're going to give us health care. And what else? You know, all the other good things are protecting us from terrorists. I mean,
oh, they're creating jobs.
Oh, that too. Yeah. oh goodness.
Now,
I am unsure. Oh, go ahead.
Did you see Obama yesterday? He was in Kansas, standing underneath that bridge that's going to be repaired soon. Telling people to pass this jobs bill so we can repair this bill, this bridge. But it's the bridge that spans between Mitch McConnell's state and John Boehner's state. And they already have everything in place to start the repairs. They're waiting for the inspection. They're waiting for the EPA. They're waiting for the Army Corps of Engineers. But they have it projected at 2015, the bridge will be completely repaired. So Obama's standing there underneath the bridge that's already shovel ready. They pass this bill so we can repair this bridge.
Yeah. You know, we have Mo, Larry, and Curly in the modern day. We got Obama, Boehner, and McConnell. I mean, just, God. You know, what next? What next?
Oh, jeez.
You know, the Democrats are going to talk about Obama doing that almost in the same way where Reagan said, tear down this wall, Mr. Gorbachev. I mean, it's just such a... Okay, let me ask you a question, Annie. Why has the president got to be by this bridge? Why aren't the residents of that local territory or city deciding whether that bridge gets fixed? Where does the president come into play on whether a damn bridge has to get repaired? I mean, what, you got to call the president to throw some asphalt in a pothole?
Yeah, well, he's got to pander to his unions, his union buddies, because they're going to be the ones manning the construction crews.
Well, many of these areas, they hire private companies that are non-union. I mean, that's... I guess I don't know. I don't know if they did hire union worker or whatever. But where I'm in Grand Rapids, where I was in Grand Rapids, they have all city workers who are unionized. But here in the Pontiac, Michigan area, on the other end of the state, they hire private companies to do that. Whether or not the workers are union, I don't know. But they got rid of a lot of city workers. So, which, you know, I'm in favor for. You obviously need city employees or you need government employees for certain things. There's no avoiding that if you want to run day-to-day operations. But I think the less employees, the very best. And when it comes to labor workers, we need to be very, very low on the numbers there because private companies can do things much more efficiently, much more rapidly, not to mention their employees are really much better trained than civil workers on doing stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true. Government should not have any union employees at all. I do not believe in government workers being union employees. If it's on the private
then that takes away their civil rights and it allows to organize. I mean, if you think about it, the Constitution was to prevent government from being intrusive. So that's kind of a double-edged sword.
Then you have a government employee negotiating with the unions for their own pay. So you've got a union member negotiating with themselves to do their pay and benefits. Doesn't that give them then an unfair advantage over any civilian employee?
Well, any time you work for government, you have an unfair advantage because government is government. But the bottom line is that we cannot tell and we cannot say because you work for the government, you are now not allowed to organize.
You can
organize,
but not in a union. We had when I was in New York City Police Office, we had the Police Benevolent Association.
Well, that's fine too. I mean,
its own group that then sat down in negotiations with government officials.
Fine. I mean, my whole point is
that. But government itself already has safeguards against employment abuse. There are laws in place. And
that's a pretty modest claim, Annie.
No. if you're a government employee, there's rules and regulations that govern that workplace, that you have to have mandatory breaks, you have to, if you've been working there for so long, you're up for the pay raise and blah, blah, blah. There are certain steps already in place government has that a civilian workplace does not have. And it's regulated far stricter than a civilian workplace, having worked both. You know, you have far more freedoms and chances of abuse on the civilian side than on the government side. And if any abuse did occur, the penalties are very strict.
Well, if that's the case, those situations need to be taken care of with as far as the employer and the whoever's in charge, the local taxpayers or whatever. I mean, that's up to them to decide, not me sitting in Pontiac, Michigan, or you in South Carolina. Now, we can have an opinion on our own local on what we want to do. But getting back to the issue at hand, I think when it comes to construction workers,
You need streets and sanitation and things like that. I agree. But I think it needs to be very limited just for the simple fact of the inefficiency of government. And not to mention, when you have like a construction crew or a huge civil labor workforce for a city, that's an extremely cost abundance type of situation that cities in tough times will not be able to afford. Therefore, it's better not even to get that started, just to hire, take bids, which many cities have done. You take bids on stuff like that and just get it done. I mean, sometimes cities, I think, I don't want to use New York as an example, but you have to use New York as an example. It's almost in many ways become like a buddy club on who gets hired from what I'm reading online. And I mean, we just can't have that. A company does discriminate, but a company more 99 times out of 100 will hire the best qualified person because they want the business to prosper. In cities, it doesn't work that way. Annie, I have a friend. Okay, you're hired. Can't do that. Well, we're seeing that with the TSA. I mean, they're not even checking out these pedophiles who are giving these little boys hand jobs. They're not even checking to see they're on the sex offender list. Can you imagine? I mean, it's just crazy. David Zublik, who has his show on BTR like at 6, he was going crazy how one airport had like 3 sex offenders, and I don't mean sex offenders where they were peeing outside or just the bureau, real sex offenders, hired by the TSA and working employees in an airport.
Jeez.
Can you imagine that? Not one.
I didn't catch that. That's something I missed. Oh, man.
Probably because the supervisor himself or she-self is one of them freaks.
Oh, that's like Illinois where they were allowing the sex offenders to be babysitters.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. Man, where did you hear that from?
Oh no, I did a show on that. I did a whole show on that. The people names. They were being paid because they have a program so that people can work, parents can work, that they can have a friend or a relative or an unlicensed home caretaker watch these children. So people are arbitrarily saying, oh, well, this guy's got a little tiny ad in the grocery store. Let me. So what, they're not licensed? So what, they haven't been checked out by the state or anything like that? And they say, all right, fine, you can take care of my kid. And they came up with a whole slew of sex offenders. And some of them that had done some heavy, heavy time for pedophilia. And they were babysitting these kids. And they're getting paid to do this by the state. Oh, man.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And that's one of the reasons I think cities need to go to hiring public, public sector type. It's so much more efficient. Not to mention, companies are always sending many of their employees to seminars, to back to school, to special skill centers, because in order to compete with company A, B, and C, you have to be in that cutting edge of whatever it is, talents and abilities you have, as well as what can help that company prosper. And because of competition, employers are always doing this. With government, you really don't have to. It's just, well, you know, they're kind of the only one who takes care of it, and that's how we accept it. And that shouldn't be that way. That's an indoctrine for failure, which we have seen throughout the years. I don't know, when you were in New York, how long it takes people to fill a shovel of asphalt. But in my old hometown, used to take 3 or 4 days. And I mean, I'm unsure how it would take 3 or 4 days. I mean, you say, look, people are, you know, you shattered a shock or you blew a tire or something. You got to get your front end realigned. And, I mean, oh, God, just city bureaucracy is such a pain in the butt. Even calling them. One time they missed our house for the trash. And the lady's arguing with me, well, did you just put it out today? I said, no, I had it out yesterday and it was tagged. Well, are you sure? Yeah, I'm sure, lady. And I finally told her, I said, look, this stuff doesn't get picked up in 8 hours. I says, you're going to seriously regret this. I said, goodbye. Next thing I know, I'm hearing a truck shake, and it's right in front of our house throwing trash in. I'm just like. I mean, you would think they'd have a record right there that this person at this address, yeah, they call every week saying you missed the house, then you know they're lying. First time I've ever called in my life. You would think, oh, okay, well, we're sorry. We'll get, you know, we'll get it out there, get taken care of. Oh, God.
Dealing with
cities is almost as bad when you call their number. It's almost as bad as calling those 800 numbers where you get someone who can barely speak English and can't understand what you're saying. But then they say, oh, my name is William. How may I direct your call? You're like, William is your name? Yeah. Where are you in? India?
Well, talking about shovel ready, I have a clip that has what was considered three of the best moments up. It's up on YouTube, and I downloaded this one in the debate last night. And the first one has to do with shovel ready. Catch this. And it's Gary Johnson that did the best line.
My next door neighbor's two dogs have created more shovel ready jobs than this current administration.
What Americans are looking for in order to build their confidence is leadership. There is a severe deficiency of leadership in Washington, D.C., and once we fill that void, I believe American people will begin to develop some confidence again in terms of believing in this nation. Ronald Reagan was the one who said that we are a shining city on a hill. We've slid down the side of that hill. Americans want somebody who's going to lead them back up to the top of that hill. That's how we turn this country around.
32 years ago, we were in the same place. We had a failing president. He gave a speech on malaise. People wrote about the presidency being too big. Nobody could do it. The Soviet Union was on offense. And a leader came along. He said, when your brother-in-law is unemployed, it's a recession. When you're unemployed, it's a depression. When Jimmy Carter's unemployed, it's a recovery. Nothing will turn America around more than election night when Barack Obama loses decisively.
I like those three.
I love those answers. Those were the dog answer was great. And you know that line that Newt gave was great. When Jimmy Carter's employed, it's called recovery. You know, Ronald Reagan just had a wit to him that was just so funny. I mean, he was not really afraid to insult anybody. I mean, could you imagine Ronald Reagan in this political correct world? How about a movie like Blazing Saddles being made today? I mean, it would
be... Yeah, matter of fact, Donaldson had asked Ronald Reagan once a question, and I have this is a little short clip on this one. This is too funny.
You're asking a hypothetical question, and I found out that I never get in trouble if I don't answer one of those. So, never, Sam...
Mr. President, in talking about the continuing recession tonight, you have blamed mistakes of the past, and you have blamed the Congress. Does any of the blame belong to you?
Yes, because for many years I was a Democrat.
You know, this is something that Rick Perry should use, something like that. Yeah, okay, I'll take the blame for that happening in the past, because I was a Democrat. I didn't know better, you know? Now
yeah.
I know.
Well, one of the things that works for people like Newt or Mr. Kane is because they have that charisma. For the others, they don't. They're themselves. Nothing's wrong with that. But, I mean, you have to know when to, swing for the fences. You have to know when to swing to just get somebody on base or just to bring someone home. Reagan had a good – he had that. And I think Herman Kane has that. I think Newt has some of it. For some of the other ones, they don't have that, like a Ron Paul. So Ron Paul just needs to be Ron Paul. But, I mean, it works for Reagan because it's Reagan. No, it's no different than in that second debate with Mondale. when they were saying that age was an issue or whatever. And Reagan says, well, that's very true. He goes, I don't want to make an age. He goes, I don't want to make age an issue. I don't want to exploit my opponent's inexperience and youth. And,
yeah,
you know, he made it work for him. And that's something that a lot of candidates can't do. Jimmy Carter never could have done something like that. Lloyd Benson never could have done something like that. Even George Bush, either Bushes. I mean, those candidates were kind of like bricks.
George W. did have a sense of humor, and he was able to do things on a fly. His father, not so much. Him, yes, he did have that ability. But you know, I'm going to play this.
Al Gore is another one who never could have done.
No,
he was a stiff.
He's got no personality. But I think each candidate's personality come out in this very last clip. Because the very last question they asked them before the end of the debate was, who on the stage would you choose as your vice president? So in other words, they asked them to look around at the other candidates, and which one of them would you choose as your vice president? And they came up with some very, very clever answers in this one.
From YouTube, our wild card question comes from Darrell Owens in Richmond, Virginia.
If you had to choose one of your opponents on the stage tonight to be your running mate in the 2012 election, who would you choose and why? And why would this person help you make the country better?
Again, if you had to choose a running mate, one of the people on the stage with you, who would you choose and why? 30 seconds down the row. Governor Johnson.
Sorry. Well, that would be the guy three down... Congressman Paul, and that would be the notion that this country is about liberty and freedom, and that right now we are facing an extraordinary crisis, that if we do not address it now, we're going to find ourselves in a monetary crisis that is going to leave us all with nothing. And if we want to look at an example of that, that would be Russia, that experienced the monetary collapse that in our lifetimes may never require. We need to avoid that now.
Senator Santorum, who would you choose?
I would pick someone who would do what I have articulated I would do as President of the United States. That's what a vice president should be, someone who would follow through on what you promised the American public to
do. You have eight to choose.
And I would say that, you know, right now that, you know, the guy that I'm agreeing with most up on stage is probably the guy to my left. So I would say that Newt Gingrich would be the guy that I would pick as someone who would follow through with what I'm saying.
Speaker Gingrich.
Yeah, I'm going to disappoint those in the audience who want this to be a Hollywood game. I don't have any idea who I would pick as the vice presidential nominee. What I do know is it would have to be a person capable of being president of the United States, and that would be the first criteria. These are all good friends of mine. I couldn't imagine hurting any of their feelings by choosing one tonight.
Congressman Paul Hurtaway.
I don't plan to make a choice at the moment because I am on national polls. It seems like I'm in third place now. I think it would be inappropriate. As soon as I'm one of the two top tier, then I will start thinking along that line. But right now I'm going to defer and just work very hard and make sure that I stay in the top tier and then eventually be one of the top two contenders.
Governor Perry, how do you answer Darrell Jones?
Well, staying with the game show idea here, I don't know how you would do this, but if you could take Herman Cain and mate him up with Newt Gingrich, I think you would have a couple of really interesting guys to work with.
Governor Romney, Darrell Owens would like an answer.
There are a couple of images I'm going to have a hard time getting out of my mind. That's one, and Gary Johnson's dogs are the other, I'll tell you. I'm going to go with Newt on this, meaning I'm going to subscribe to his same view. I know I'm going to disappoint. But my view is if you pick a vice president, if you're lucky enough to become the nominee of this party, picking a vice president should be something you give a lot of thought to, a lot of evaluation to, and you want someone who, without question, could become the president of the United States. These people could all fill that position. Any one of them would be a better president than what we have now.
Governor Romney, I hate to follow up here, but you called Governor Perry unelectable based on his Social Security.
Actually, I didn't use that term, but the newspaper did. That happens now and then. But the point is still, I think that there are some problems that exist in each of our backgrounds that make it harder for us to get elected. I hope we get elected. I hope one of us gets that White House. I think we will, because I think this president has failed miserably. But I'll tell you one thing. I Governor Perry and I disagree on some issues. I think I probably disagree with everybody. We all have different views on different issues, but one thing's for sure. We all agree that President Obama needs to be former President Obama, and we're going to make that happen.
Congresswoman Bachman, back to the original question.
Obviously, we need to have a strong constitutional conservative, and that's what I would look for in a vice president. But I want to say this as well. Every 4 years, conservatives are told that we have to settle. And it's anybody but Obama. That's what we're hearing this year. I don't think that's true. I think if there's any year, President Obama has the lowest public approval ratings of any president in modern time. He hasn't gone to the basement yet. It'll be a lot lower than what it is now. That's why we need to choose a candidate who represents conservatives and constitutional conservative positions.
Mr. King.
This is a game, and it is hypothetical. I'll play the game. If Governor Romney would throw out his jobs growth plan and replace it with 999, he has a shot. If he does not, I would probably go with Speaker Gingrich, who I have the greatest admiration for in all seriousness because of his history and because of his depth of knowledge. I could go on because I have respect for everybody up here, but it's a game.
It is a YouTube question, Governor Huntsman.
I'm tempted to say that when all is said and done, the two guys standing in the middle here, Romney and Perry, aren't going to be around because they're going to bludgeon each other to death. But I'm also reminded of about 4 years ago, we had two front runners in similar situations. One by the name of Rudy Giuliani, I think, and the other by the name of Fred Thompson. They seemed to disappear altogether. I can't remember where they went. But I would have to say, since Chris Wallace doesn't qualify as somebody on the stage, so I can't pick one of you, that Herman Cain, because of his selection of ties, the fact that we both apparently agree with the gold standard. Well, you're wearing the yellow ties here tonight. And because of the good neighbor policy, 999 mixed with my tax policy would be the most competitive thing this nation could ever achieve. I'd have to say Herman's my man.
Candidates, thank you very much.
Now, that didn't show the personality of each one of the candidates.
That was a great piece. I mean, that was just a terrific, terrific piece. I really enjoyed listening to that. And very, very, I just enjoyed it. And in some ways, I think those type of, when you go around the room, those type of questions, and you find out more about the candidates and what they are like that you don't really see in your mainstream debate, where you're almost like a stuffy robot.
Mm-hmm. And this is where I find Michelle Bachman lost last night. Her answers were kind of pat. Everything was practiced. And even that final answer, she didn't answer. Instead of saying, you know, I'd pick any one of these, you know, it's serious, she had showed no humor. She just danced around the question. She never answered it. She just said, we have to be conservative and not settle for a second best and defeat Obama type of, you know, rah, 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 sis, boom, bah.
Well, as we kind of wind the show down here, President Ubellis, who would you select as a running mate?
You know, I have a strong leaning towards Herman Cain and Newt Gingrich combination. I liked Perry's answer.
I think you all know who I like. There's no doubt about that. That's your guy there in South Carolina, the Republican.
DeMint?
No. The guy, the Republican you had, who head of the Republican Party.
Oh, that's Chad Connolly. He's the GOP chair.
Even Joe liked him. No, Joe Coffin and Joe likes him.
Matter of fact, we're supposed to be having Chad Connolly on again. I have to call his office and set up a schedule for that. You know, and I have a guest list that I'm starting to work on going to be working on it this week to line up a bunch of new guests. Matter of fact, I have Lieutenant. I'm going to get this wrong.
He has a great. That guy has a great sense of humor too. He wrote me a note. I wrote him and said, "I hope you remember me. I was on your show." And so I asked him, you know, I wanted to get him on Jermaine and I show. He wrote me a note back and said, he said, "I'll get back with you at the end of the week." This was on Facebook. Just he says, "The kids are away and the wife is getting fresh, so I'll talk to you later."
I mean, that was Chad Conley?
Yeah, just the funniest little remark of, you know, I mean, oh, boy. I mean, there's something to be said about that kind of response other than a, well, the office is closed. You know, just the typical standard crap you always hear. I thought that was really funny when he said the kids are away and the wife's getting fresh. Oh, boy.
Yeah, I have a couple of them. I've got Stacy Swimp. He's a black conservative. I have to call him. I've got Carol Tabor. She's president of the Family Security Matters. That's a fantastic website. You should take a look at that. Looking forward to Lieutenant Colonel Francis Rice, who's part of this lawsuit of black Americans suing the Democratic Party and Obama for civil rights violations.
Well, he's, Lord knows, he's violated enough of them.
So, you know, I got some guests that are going to be lining up that we're going to be looking forward to, and hopefully, you know, we'll have a great listening audience for that. So has your cafe there calmed down?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a couple, they had the kids in here earlier, so it was quite a bit louder, and they've all gone back to class, so this is a nice, I really like this place because the people who own it are basically a husband and wife. They both retired, and basically they, you know, they like to hire people from the neighborhood, and they know everyone who comes in, and it's just a neat place. When I came in the first time, it was kind of weird. People didn't know who I was. But then I'm doing the show, and everyone starts gathering around and sitting. They just grab a chair and pull up right at the table and just kind of looking around. And, I mean, it was kind of neat. So by the time I left, basically, I had a new extended family. Even some guy came in here recently, Annie, this was so neat. He was in the rain. He was from out of town. He was soaking wet. He said, "My car broke down over there at the corner." And the guy said, the lady there said, "My son-in-law runs the tow service." She goes, "I'll have it towed to the mobile." And he said, "Oh, gee, thanks a lot." I mean, you just don't see a lot of that in today's world. It's nice to be surrounded by that.
Well, what's the name of the place and where is it at? So if anyone's listening, they can visit it.
Traverse City, Michigan. And not only that, this is the national cherry capital of the entire planet. And it's called the Euro Bakery. Kathy and Mike, what a great name he has, but Kathy and Mike are the proprietors. And she actually said they were thinking about opening another bakery, but they were more into another little cafe, but they were mainly concerned that if they did that, they would lose what they have here because then you start franchising out. And they just to keep one, and I really like it because they have actually a dance studio next door. And you have to go in the front door here to get into that studio. So the eye candy for Cool Mike is very, very nice watching, let me tell you.
So are you visiting up there or are you living up there now?
No. Long story, and I guess that's for another time. But I'm only here for, let's see, probably about 10 more hours. So if anyone wants plans on assassinating me, come and get me now because in about 10 hours I'll be on the road. Getting back to Detroit.
Attack watch.
Exactly. Anyway, Annie, I guess we've got a couple minutes left. Thanks for a great show. You have a good weekend, and I'll mute myself and let you close the show.
All right, Mike, and I'll be talking to you either over the weekend or next week. And
Next week. You ain't going to hear from me for the weekend. That's you and Jermaine's territory. I take weekends off. You never hear Rush on weekends. See you, Annie. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Good night, Mike. You have been listening to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio, and we just had a full episode talking about the debates and each and every one of the candidates. I had a lot of fun doing it, played a bunch of great clips. So if you didn't get a chance to listen to the whole episode, please feel free to listen to it later on at your leisure and learn more about the candidates and the debates. You get the quick thing without having to sit through all the commercials and everything else. So join us back again here tomorrow for our Piss and Moan episode, and then we'll be back again next week on Tuesday as we tweak and freak next week. So as Willie Nelson always says, well, what happened to my Willie?
Turn out the lights, the party's over. They say that all good things must end. Call it a night, the party's